welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, in the second hour of today's show, I've got something quite interesting lined up for you. I've been having a chat with Irish comedian Aidan Killian. And we're going to be talking about a variety of things. I don't know quite what we're going to be talking about yet, but I've got a few ideas. So I'd just like to say, welcome aboard to the Ship of Truth, Aidan Killian.
Hey, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, you're currently in Adelaide at the Fringe Festival. I'd just like to say welcome to Australia. I know you've probably been here for a while, but I'm not sure if you're aware. A lot of people overseas think of Australia as this very relaxed kind of beach-going society where everyone's, you know, pretty takes life pretty easy. But what a lot of people don't know is that Australia is a little bit of a totalitarian nanny state. And I think this, I've got a lot of really interesting information to share with you, Aidan, which might even be good material for your show, because I know your show delves into some of these matters. But I just want to actually read to you a few tidbits that you may actually find quite interesting about Australia and some of the bizarre laws we have. And this is quite a long list, but go ahead.
It's funny you say that, but before you even start, I think it was like my second day here. I was in Perth and I was cycling my host's bicycle, and a policeman started shouting at me, "Hey, hey, hey," and he started pointing at his head.
Oh dear.
I didn't know what he was on about. He was giving out to me for not having a helmet on. It's your law that you have to wear a helmet. Wow, talk about getting babysat. At first, I just thought he was worried about the bald spot on top of my head. He was concerned I might get burnt on the top of my head. But he told me I had to wear a helmet. And since then, I've had two cops say the same to me. So now I wear a helmet. And some people might say, well, you should to be safe. But I mean, is that not my own decision? I'm not going to harm anybody else by not wearing a helmet.
Well, you know, you're very lucky they didn't slap a fine on you, because actually a lot of people just get fined. I mean, you must have had some pretty indulgent police that just let you off with a warning. People get fined all the time for not wearing a helmet. And
one cop pulled me over and he took out the list of fines and he started looking at all of the fines, and it was like a book. It was like page after page after page of all these fines, and I was thinking, wow, this is a great business. That's why I see so many cops here all the time. There's like cops. I could walk 5 minutes and I could guarantee you I'd see a cop car. Or I even saw cops on horses. What's that about? Are we in the 1800s at war with Napoleon? What's going on?
Yeah, they use horses. Yeah, it's quite popular. You know, it gives the horses something to do, I guess. But look, let me just read to you some of the really interesting things that are actually illegal in Australia or require permits, otherwise you get fined. In Victoria, you actually need a license to have a picnic. This is a new one. In most of Australia, you need a license to go fishing. And these all have quite strict fines. If you don't have the license, you get fined. Laser pointers are banned in New South Wales. You know the little things that teachers use? They're actually banned, $5,000 fine.
I wonder why.
In most states of Australia, you can be fined for leaving your door unlocked of your car. And recently in Brisbane, a motorist was fined for leaving his car window slightly down on a hot day. In New South Wales, cyclists are forced to carry photo identification. So not only would you need to carry your helmet, Aidan, you'd have to have your photo ID, otherwise you get fined. In the ACT, police have now been given power to enter homes without permission to test suspected drink drivers. So if you get out of your car, go home, go to bed, and for some reason the police think you might have been drink driving, they can come in and right into your house and they can give you a breath test. Now, in Sydney, now I don't know if you spent much time in Sydney, Aidan?
No, I haven't, not yet. I'll be there soon.
Well, in Sydney, they have some of the most incredibly controversial laws in the world now about the kind of nanny state sort of management of people's drinking activities. And here's a few of the things that they've brought in the last couple of years. No shots after midnight. You can't buy a shot after midnight. You can't buy pre-mixed drinks after midnight. These are all state-legislated laws. Customers cannot buy more than four drinks at a time after midnight. That's a bizarre little law. So if you're out with a few friends and you want to buy a round of drinks, up to four is okay. Can't do that. maximum two drinks per person after 2 a.m. And this is a killer. No takeaway alcohol after 10 p.m., which means if you go out for dinner and you want to buy a bottle of wine and it's 10:01 p.m., no alcohol for you. And many of the pubs in Sydney serve drinks in plastic cups. And that's, of course, because you're most likely to smash your glass and go on a killing rampage. There have been proposals to bring in a tattoo registry where all people who get tattoos would be put on a national database, which is like a crime database. Australian police have been pulling over pedestrians for breath tests. They're doing strip searches on the streets of Sydney. And not only on the streets, they go into public swimming pools. And I've got a photograph of New South Police going into a public pool with sniffer dogs.
What are they looking for?
Oh, well, they're basically looking for drugs. Yeah.
In the swimming pool.
In the swimming pool, yeah. I just think a lot of this is actually quite funny. And you know, you might as well laugh as cry because, I mean, it has become so bizarre and so... It is so Kafkaesque, as we might say, in Australia now. And the strange thing is that there isn't much outcry about it. There isn't much talk about it. I think so many people in Australia are just either too tired, they're too overworked, maybe they're a bit drugged from all the fluoride or whatever it is that they're drinking. But they just put up with it. One of the recent changes in law, which has actually got a lot of people riled up, is the new vaccine legislation, which means that that if you want to get some standard tax rebates, especially the family tax rebate, which is worth a lot of money and is pretty well essential for people who've got a family who are on medium to lower incomes, you can't get that anymore unless your kids are fully vaccinated. So they've essentially brought in mandatory vaccination through financial punishment in Australia. Anyway, look, that's just a few things. There's actually a lot more than that, but what's your take on all this, Aidan?
Well, it's quite horrifying, really. I mean, you've listed so many things there. I'm not sure where to start.
Yeah.
I mean, in reality, if we were to just look at it on the basic level, like before we get into the deeper, darker ones like forced vaccination, if we look at like not leaving your window open enough or opening it too far or whatever that silly nonsense was and getting fined.
Yeah.
Well, that comes down to the people. I mean, if I get fined, I mean, there was a clamp on my car in Ireland and I could have paid the fine or I could have done the right thing for humanity. So I got an angle grinder and I took the clamp off my car because the clamp was forcing me to stay in a place longer than I wanted to stay in the first place. Now, people will say, oh, that's illegal. You can't take the clamp off. But the reality is I have a constitutional right and a universal declaration of human rights to travel freely. And everybody has that right. You're born with it. That is your real God-given right, if you want to call it that.
Fair enough.
And if someone's forcing me to not travel, what they're doing is they're stealing my rights. So I can pay them money and therefore acknowledge that they have some sort of consent over me. Or I can take it off. So I get an angle grinder, take the clamp off. Cops come, blue flashing lights, and they say, are you all right there? I say, yeah, I'm fine now. Thanks for your help. Good night. And they obviously want my name. Now, if I give them my name, I'm in contract with them. But I have no interest in contracting with these human beings. Now, I get it. They're doing their job. I'm being polite. I'm not an idiot. I know that the cops can hurt me and use unnecessary force, lie together, and I can get in, you know, trouble. But I also have to do what's right for me and mankind. So I say, he goes, look, you're destroying public property. And I went, well, that's a very serious accusation. And I looked down at the clamp and there's writing on it because it belongs to a corporation, right?
Yes.
I said, it says here it belongs to a corporation, which means it's a private matter, a civil matter. So thanks very much for your help and have a nice evening. Now, you'd think that would be the end of it, right? No, but he goes, what's your name? And I go, under what law do I have to tell you my name? And he says one of these acts of the law, under act, blah, blah, blah. And I said, hang on a second, are you saying an act of the law? Are you claiming that an act of the law is the law and you were to do so as a fraudulent defense? And he stares at me, bewildered, going, what's this guy on about? And I said, look, I did acting classes when I was young. That's not real. He gets angry. What's your name? I go, I don't have to tell you my name. And he says, well, then show me ID. So I go, all right. And I point at my face. And he goes, no, I want to see ID with a photograph. And I go, what do you want a photograph when you have the real thing? I was, tell me your name. And I go, what's your name? John. Now tell me your name. Okay, John, you can call me Aiden. Aiden what? Ah, Jesus, John, we're on first name terms at this stage. And this goes back and forth. People start watching. Now, I'm careful not to humiliate the cop, right?
Yeah.
But I try and speak reason to him. And I said, look, I have no problem with this company sending me a letter. And we can deal with this in a civil manner. But I need to travel home now. And if you're forcing me, are you detaining me? Am I under arrest? And he said, you know, because I wasn't under arrest. But so when I tried to walk away, you know, he put his hand on me. And I go, now you are detaining me against my will under threat of force. And he was sort of scratching his head. He didn't know what to do because he just wanted me to give the name and that was it. But my attitude is, I can pay the money. I have the money for this. But if everybody didn't, if everybody went, I'm not paying anymore, that's the end of it. It's over.
Yeah.
Right? So long story short, yeah, they took my body and they brought the body into the police station. They stole my wallet. In the wallet, there was a credit card, points at the name Aiden Killian and says, is that you? I said, don't be ridiculous. That's just plastic. But he takes their name and puts it into Google or police Google. I think they call it Palugal.
Yeah.
and he starts asking me questions like, what's my date of birth? What's my address? But each of these questions are important. And he goes, what's your date of birth? And I went, do I have to tell you the truth? And he says, yeah, whatever you say can and will be used against you. And if it can be used against you, well, why the fuck would I be telling him information if he's going to use it against me? But I say, well, if I have to tell you the truth, well, then I don't remember my date of birth. I was too young at the time. And I know that sounds funny, but the reality is it's also true, right? Because
fair
I can
enough,
just tell
yeah.
you what my mom told me, but that's just hearsay and unacceptable in a court of law. And long story short, you know, I spent a few hours in the station. I meditated. I was scared for a little while because it's quite scary being in a cell. And I said I was only going to speak to whoever was in charge of the office or whatever you could call it, the station that day. And the guy came out. And he was reasonably polite. He wasn't too aggressive. There was some of them were aggressive, in fairness, but this guy was okay. And they let me go, and that was the end of it. I never paid the fine. And that was it.
So, yeah, there you go.
So I'm not saying that would be it all okay, but I asked the question, why do people pay the fine? What happens if 10,000 people today in Australia got together and said, right, we're not paying the fines. Now, I'm not talking about clowns going around speed. I've seen assholes driving dangerously, taking their own lives and other people's lives at risk. But I'm talking about stupid fines like not wearing a helmet or jaywalking or things that are
or having
absolutely
a picnic,
ludicrous.
Having
very,
a picnic without
concept,
a license.
The very concept that we give any power to this is dangerous. And we're the ones who are the enemy here. You know, the cops are just doing their job, but we're allowing it. We're actually blaming it. We go for a picnic. You're there with your mom or your friend or your girlfriend, and you're having a sandwich with jam sandwiches and a cup of iced tea, and they come over and give you a $500 fine. If you pay it, well, fuck you, because you're the one who's harming society. I say fuck you and fuck big time, because it's ridiculous paying fines. Do the time and let society change. But if you keep giving power to it, you are the one who's causing a more dangerous place for all of us to live in.
Absolutely. Now we're just going to break. You with Truth News Radio Australia. We will be right back. Stay with us. We're going to have a really interesting chat this afternoon. Cheers. Australia, and my guest today is Aiden Killian, an Irish comedian who kind of takes the piss out of the New World Order to some extent, and a few other things. I don't know if that's an accurate description of you, Aiden, but maybe to tell us a bit about your act and how you got into it.
I used to be an investment banker, and I worked for Bear Stearns, the fifth largest investment bank in the world at the time. And I was in Tokyo, and one of the things that I had to do is I had a meeting every morning. And sometimes the more senior bankers around me, I was relatively young at that time to be in the position I was in. And I used to feel embarrassed having to speak out loud publicly, because I always felt that I didn't come across well. even if I did know what I was talking about. So I wanted better presentation skills. So I did stand-up comedy.
Excellent.
Just because I know that comedians are the best in the world at presenting themselves on TV, on stage, if you laugh at the joke, because they get instant feedback. You don't laugh, they get instant feedback. You do laugh, they know that you've heard and understood everything they said. So I did it for that reason, fell in love with making a room full of people laugh, and quit banking and became a comedian. But it took me a few years to get any good at it, and I wrote a show called Take the Red Pill. You can watch it. It's on YouTube. It's for free. And the first 15 minutes are normal, basic jokes. I mean, there's one decent joke about Ritalin and what it does to people, but most of the jokes are just normal, crappy cock jokes. Well, they're fine. They're average. But after I think it's the 16th minute, there's a bit on the banking system, how I stood up to debt, and the courts, and there's a lot in it, and I still stand by that piece and think it's very good. So this is the first show where I started talking about things that I was passionate about, and that's when it became real for me. And then last year I did a show about Jesus versus Buddha. But if you look real closely at that, what I'm ultimately saying is, because a lot of people slag off religion in the comedy world, so I tried to do one that didn't make Jesus look bad or didn't make Buddha look bad. I tried to capture the message of forgiveness and looking within. The power is within. I ultimately tried to do a show that if Jesus and Buddha were in the room, that they would be happy with what I said. And not everybody would agree with that, but I stand by it personally. And then this year I'm doing one about whistleblowers. So the truth will set you free. So each year I continue the theme of truth. And this year is about whistleblowers, and I really love whistleblowers. I love people I love anyone who tells the truth. Jesus, Socrates, Oscar Wilde, Gandhi, John Lennon, anybody who stands for it and says what they have to say and puts their heart on the line are for me heroes.
Yeah, I saw your piece on Julian Assange on YouTube.
Which piece is that?
You did a little sketch on Julian Assange.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I talk about how they come after him.
Yeah,
they tried to slur his character, right?
Yeah, and it's an incredible story, isn't it? I mean, it is so ironic. It is so ridiculous. I mean, it is actually quite funny on one level what happened to Julian Assange. I mean, it's obviously not funny for him to have been imprisoned effectively for the last 5 years, but I mean, the whole story of these two girls in Sweden and the broken condom, and then, you know, one of them goes to the police and says he's got to have an HIV test, and then this turns into like an international event.
What's amazing is this guy, Julian Assange, creates a platform that allows journalists all over the world, or you or I, anybody who has something, some truth to offer, to reveal it and not get caught. Because the amount of journalists who've shared information about criminals or about unlawful things and have got punished for it are whistleblowers in the past, like Daniel Ellsberg, who showed us about, you know, the what was going on in Vietnam, who's considered a hero even in America as a whistleblower. And he's got prizes all over the world, like the Gandhi is a Peace Prize or something like that. But he creates this platform that allows people to tell the truth. That's beautiful. What a gift to humanity.
Yeah.
We have Anonymous, all these hackers all over the world getting information. We've information about Scientology. We have people stuck in Guantanamo Bay, even though they were free. We had companies dumping chemicals off the west coast of Africa. WikiLeaks gives us the TPPA information before anyone else in the world. We can see war crimes in Iraq, Afghanistan. Ultimately, they created a platform with honest, the way they get unmanipulated truth, and we can just see, whoa, here it is right in front of us. And then all of a sudden they're after him. So they're after him with a rape allegation. Even like, there's no charges against him. There's not even a signed statement. The prosecutor dropped the case in 24 hours. The woman herself said the policeman railroaded me. She texted her friend. The policeman made up the charges. She put up on Twitter, I wasn't raped by Julian Assange. The well-respected organization Women Against Rape fully backed Julian Assange. The Swedish authorities delay tactics by ridiculing the system and making a mockery of genuine rape survivors. And the English police stand, and I've seen them stand outside about with 30 police armed looking to save us, to save the taxpayer from Julian Assange, because they're claiming he's a rapist, even though there's no charges against him. they spent over $20 million. If they genuinely care about rape survivors, maybe they could put that money into a new rape crisis center. I mean, it is ridiculous. Clearly, the only crime he's committed here is the crime of having a pointy penis.
But, yes.
Shouldn't say that on the air. Sorry.
No, I think that's fine. As you said, it's incredible. I mean, we've reached a state with civilization, and I think there does come a point where the only way to deal with it, I think, is the way you're dealing with it. And, you know, what you're doing is kind of part of a genre of comedy which is becoming more popular these days. It's a type of comedy which also has an edge to it, and it is actually about waking people up. It's not just about telling people jokes. It is actually also about waking people up, triggering the mind to think about reality. And there's a few other comedians around who've done it, and some in the past. I mean, obviously Russell Brand, you have some parallels with him. I mean, he's probably quite different, but of course George Carlin, very famous in that regard. Is there anyone in particular that you've drawn ideas from in the comedy world?
I mean, I love anybody who speaks the truth.
Yeah.
It's a lot better for me, of course, if it's funny. Bill Hicks would be someone I admired. He's not in this world, allegedly. And George Carlin. Who else? Lenny Bruce. He was a great advocate of truth and a warrior for good in this world. I love Steve Hughes, who's still around today. I'd love to see Steve Hughes. I've never seen him live. I'd love to see him live. That'd be a dream for me. So basically, any show that someone's got something to say and makes me think or makes me feel or makes me consider that maybe I was wrong about something before, that's fascinating for me in conversation. So when I have a comedian saying it in front of a room full of people, when I say full of people, these are all people with different mindsets, different beliefs. You're standing in front of 100 or 200 people, or I don't know, maybe more. And you've got people who are completely right wing, completely left wing. You've got people who haven't got an opinion. You've got people who just want cock jokes. But if you can get all of them, they don't have to agree with everything you're saying. But if you can get them all laughing at the right moment, and they're all there and they're all in that room experiencing this moment where everybody's just going, yeah, yeah, I hear it. And so if I'm talking about Julian Assange, I can say all these facts that they haven't heard before because they're reading newspapers and mainstream news that's twisting and manipulating and lying to them. So all of a sudden they're getting hit with something that they haven't been hit before. And when I hit that punchline, everybody laughs. So therefore they're in a room where everybody's in agreement with this is funny. So they may not agree with everything I say, but at least it's planting a seed inside them that, you know what, maybe they could learn more and maybe there's more levels of truth that they can search for. And that's what I love being part of.
Absolutely. And, you know, what I find is that with some of these outrages, with some of these totalitarian measures that have been brought in, there are many people who go along with it, and many people who've been manipulated by the way it's covered in the media. But when you present the information in a certain way, and that's kind of why I went through that list of things today, where you see the on a number of different levels, in a number of different areas of society, how they're doing this again and again and again, you then can realise that this is actually part of a pattern. This is not just, oh, they passed this one law to solve this one problem, because this is how it is brought to you in the media. Or they had to pass the Sydney lockout laws because there was this terrible problem with violence. What were we going to do? We had no choice. We had to pass this law. And with the anti-terrorism laws that they brought in, you know, oh, we had this terrible problem. 9/11, you know, the London terror attacks. We had to bring in these laws. We're just going to break. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Thank you.
Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. I'm talking to Aidan Killian today, an Irish comedian who's currently at the Adelaide Fringe Festival and is touring Australia with his show Take the Red Pill and a few other things. I was just saying there before the for the break, with all these extreme laws and all these outrages against freedom and democracy that are taking place, each time one happens, on each case, we're sort of led to accept it because we're told, oh, this is an extraordinary situation. You know, extraordinary measures have to be taken. But then when you look at them all together, you start to see a pattern. And that's kind of why I went through that list of things that have been happening in Australia. And when you see it in context, you realize, hey, there's something else going on here. Why are they passing laws to outlaw picnics? You know, I mean, what's that got to do with the other things that they're doing, the extreme laws about surveillance, gathering metadata? Well, it's all connected. It's all part of a totalitarian a pattern that's developed in our society. And there's this also this pattern about, you know, protecting you from yourself, the nanny state kind of mentality where everything you do is monitored so that you won't do something wrong or hurt yourself or hurt someone else. But what's actually going on? Well, it seems like our society, and this is in Australia and it's in a lot of Western countries, and I'm sure Ireland's in the similar boat, maybe not as far down the river as we are, but there is this pattern where our society, which used to be considered the freer types of society in the world, is moving towards this situation where, A, we're totally controlled, you know, just about everything is illegal or requires a license. And at the same time as that, there's all this corruption going on. There's all this lying and deception going on, warmongering, and people's money is being stolen from them in various ways, including things like bank bail-ins, which as an investment banker, I think you might be able to tell us something about. But I mean, what the heck's going on?
Are you asking me? Is that the question?
Yeah.
Are you talking to the world?
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't really seem like a question. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I have no idea what the government are doing. I don't really think that – I think everything's okay,
actually. Right.
I think that none of these laws are really laws. I think they're just recommendations. But as soon as people just don't play along with it, well, then that's it, finished. So if you're not allowed to have a picnic, just everybody go and have a picnic. And then that's finished with, right? I mean, in Ireland, a few hundred years ago, there was something called the famine. People refer to it as the potato blight and the famine, but it was a genocide, and it would take anybody maybe 15 minutes of their focus time to work out it was a genocide. Our population was 8 million. After a few years, it was 4 million. At the time, we were run by what was known as the English Empire, British Empire. And if you look at when they had an empire, they basically ran the whole world, the globe, all around the world. Now, if that's true, that means they knew that the potato blight was coming, and we can look at that and we can document it because we can see that they sent over a lot of soldiers. They basically doubled up their protection at that time because they knew trouble was coming. It was illegal for an Irish, when I say Irish person, at the time they were separated with religions, Catholic and Protestant. So it was illegal for a Catholic to own land. So you couldn't own land. So you can't grow whatever you want. You can only grow what you're told to grow. So they were told to grow the potato for themselves, and they were growing wheat for their landlords or their lords or their employers. They weren't allowed to own a fishing rod. They weren't allowed to own property. They couldn't own a boat. So, and they weren't allowed to catch produce because that was owned by the king. So they couldn't catch a rabbit and eat it, for example. They'd be executed for that. So they had no ability to feed themselves.
Yeah.
They were ordered to grow a potato. But they knew the potato blight was coming, and they all died. All right. Now, these are laws that clearly are not real laws. Like if you're not allowed on a fishing rod, if you need a license to fish, they're not reasonable, and therefore that they have no right to exist.
Yeah, indeed. And I agree with you, and many people do. Yet some of the laws that are the most outrageous, for example, the vaccine regulations which have now come in, are vigorously supported, virulently supported by many people. And a lot of people even go beyond what is actually mandated. For example, many people now in Australia, and I've heard this in New Zealand too, many young families, like young mothers with babies, are forcing relatives, like adult relatives, to get a whooping cough vaccine before they can see the baby. Now, this is not even required by law, but what it is, programming has become so powerful in people through all the scaremongering.
If they get their vaccine, right, does that not protect them? So why do they care if someone else has whooping cough? I thought if you got your vaccine, you're safe. So why do they care so much?
Well, it's fascinating because there's this thing called the herd immunity effect. And this is all part of what you might call the greater good argument. And the greater good argument seems to be used in all of these totalitarian rules. And the more ridiculous, the more they tend to use it, is that you have to make a sacrifice for the greater good. Now, with the herd immunity, what it means is that everyone has to be vaccinated to keep the herd immunity up so that little Johnny won't have a chance of getting sick. So it's an argument about everyone making a sacrifice for the greater good. You know, it doesn't make a lot of sense unless you see it through this lens of
look, the reason sacrifice. It doesn't make sense is because, I mean, you get it. You get it because you look into this and probably most of your listeners do. Just for the record, I am an anti-vaxxer. It was put on the other day. Somebody wrote, some great Scott people wrote a review about my show and they gave it. The opening line was Aiden's a conspiracy theorist, but he's not an anti-vaxxer. And I never mentioned vaccines in the show. I think she was trying to say that I'm not stupid or not crazy. But by that very statement alone, she thinks that anybody who questions vaccines is an idiot. Now, we need to look at the facts with vaccines, right? Because I'm not an expert on this subject, by the way. I'm just anti-doing anything that I haven't looked into.
Sure.
So, I mean, for me, I know that they put mercury in vaccines for a long period of time. That's dangerous. And anybody who allows their children put vaccine, you put mercury inside your child, well, then you're really, really dangerous. And maybe you should consider not having children, or you should consider trying to care more about humanity, because sticking mercury in your children is very, very foolish. And that was forced upon us or recommended for a long time. Now, the same people who recommended that are still recommending vaccines. Now, I don't believe there's mercury in them anymore. However, if we look at the Amish people, three of them have, there's only three cases ever of autism.
Indeed.
And two of those received the vaccine, and the third one they have no records of, so most likely did. So based on that, and based on what I've seen with the World Health Organization, when I looked into it, they have the name of a disease, and I don't remember what it is, but they say basically at least 1 in 1,000 people get it due to their vaccines. Well, I wouldn't take that risk because I don't think that's a healthy risk for my child. And people go, well, your child might get polio. No, they won't, because that disappeared in 1994. Oh, and the flu vaccine, that's proof that it doesn't work. Anybody who gets a flu vaccine, I mean, I don't want to say they should take their own life because that's not a nice thing to say. But I mean, you really need to detox that shit. You need to detox that out of your system, and you need to look into what you're doing, because your thought process is slowing down the development of mankind. And I, you know, from my heart, I beg for you to just take a day off and look into things and make some conscious decisions, because you're making the world a worse place to live in. So stop it.
Yeah, well, thanks for that, Aiden. I mean, you know, it's just a very difficult situation now in Australia with the extreme nature of the laws mm-hmm. that they've brought in. But it's also made more difficult, of course, by the media, by the fact that people can be manipulated into being afraid of things. And if people are told again and again and again that the boogeyman's coming to get you, it's the same with terrorism, it's the same with other things, they will develop a mindset where they go along with all kinds of draconian laws because they've been told that there's some terrible thing to be afraid of. What do you think? I mean, what's your take on that?
Well, my take on that is if somebody comes to me and they say, Aiden, if you don't kill your neighbor, you're going to go to prison. I would like to think that I would do the right thing and not kill my neighbor, because that's wrong. So the only reason I would kill my neighbor is because I'm so afraid. and I think that my life's more important. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And we are just going to break. We'll be right back with one more segment. You're listening to Truth News Radio. Stay with us. Radio, and I'm talking to Aidan Killian today. Now, Aidan, you were just making a point there. I was talking about this this tendency of people to be able to be manipulated, and you maybe just finish your thought there.
My point is, when we act from a place of fear, that's not in the interest of ourselves or mankind. We can act from fear or we can act from love. Fear is basically the opposite of love. So if somebody says, you can't do that, and if you do, we're going to punish you. And you do it because you're afraid of the punishment. Well, then you're not acting on behalf of the world. You're not acting in connection with the highest good. You're acting as a slave to fear itself. And fear is the opposite of love. Therefore, your duty to everything that's good in the world, to yourself, to mankind, is to act from a place of love and never, ever, ever, ever do something because you're afraid. And if we all did that, well, I promise you, we'd be in a much more beautiful world.
Well, that sounds pretty sensible. It seems that a lot of what's going on in the West now is we're just acting from fear, and the fear has become the keynote that sort of drives everything. There's this kind of connection between all these topics. For example, with laws that have been brought in to allow government surveillance. Again, that's been brought in because there's this terrible fear that of terrorist acts. And so the government now has mandated that telecommunications companies have to collect metadata, and that all that metadata can be accessed with no warrant. This is now law in Australia. Any metadata, which is a lot of information about where you are, who you called, who you sent an email to, who it was from, your GPS data at any point in time, all this is actually accessible without even a warrant, simply because we're afraid that there are some bad people. Another example, totally different topic, but Australia recently had a law which was repealed, whereby carbon dioxide was taxed. This is the famous carbon tax in Australia. I don't know where you stand on this issue, Aidan, but there was a lot of protest against this in Australia because, again, it was about this terrible fear of this, you know, coming world disaster of global warming and climate change. And so they brought in these punitive carbon tax laws, which actually affected all individuals, just ordinary householders. Electricity prices went up by about 30%. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
I don't know much about it, but I know in general that governments need to be smaller and people need to be bigger. And so that's what it boils down to. Less government control, more people, more sovereignty, more people having time to think for themselves. I mean, it should be, if I was going to make any government law, if I was in charge, if I was dictator of the world, I would say it'd be one. The law is that everybody has to take 1 hour to themselves, by themselves, no technology, no distractions, and sit there and think. Because I know how crazy the world looks. I get it. You look around and you see all these sheeple and these people making crazy decisions, and then being herd control telling you, well, if you don't get your whooping cough injection, you can't see my baby. Well, I get it. There is a lot of madness, but despite all that, the world is full of heroism. It's full of love, and you can see it. And if you get people to just be alone, on their own, without distractions, that power will grow inside of them, and they'll see the truth because they come from a place of truth. And that's my law. Everybody, 1 hour a day, shut up and listen to yourself.
Yeah, that's really, really good advice. But of course, in your case, you're actually doing a lot of talking. And you're touring around Australia at the moment. Where have you been so far?
Touring the world. I'm doing a 9-month tour. That's enough time to have a baby. I'm not having a baby though. that I'm aware of. I'm doing a 9-month tour. Whistleblowers is the name of the show. It's about Julian Assange, Edward Snowden, Chelsea Manning. They're my heroes, along with anybody else in this world who speaks the truth, especially at the risk of their own life. And the show's going great. I mean, I do get morons in my audience. I do get people who haven't got a clue what I'm talking about. I get people who try crazy heckles. But the show's good. It's getting good reviews. It got a good one in the Advertiser the other day. Deliciously Subversive, she called it. And I would love people to come along to the Sydney show. The details are on my site, aidankillian.com. Sydney show. Got a great show in Melbourne. I'm really excited about it on March 5th and 6th. That's the big one. Come to that one. That's going to be my favorite show. And I'm finishing off the Adelaide Fringe, and then I'm touring all over the world to Glastonbury Festival and Edinburgh and so on. So come to my show and say Excellent. Hello to me. We can give out about vaccines. We can make the world a better place by smiling and sending good vibrations to all human beings.
Well, I'll send the email out about this show to everyone on my list.
Oh, thanks.
And we have a lot of listeners in Sydney, actually. So you say the show in Sydney is on March the 6th, is it?
March the 5th in Melbourne and 15th, just before St. Paddy's Day, 15th in Sydney and then Byron Bay as well. I'll send you the details of those three gigs, Byron, Sydney and Melbourne. That'd be great.
Absolutely, yeah. And
Melbourne, March 5th, be there.
Yeah, I'll try to get all the truthers on my list to come to your show. So
that'll be nice to have backup from the – they'll raise the intelligence of the average audience. Woohoo!
Yeah. Well, look, it's been great talking to you today, mate, and I really hope it all goes well.
Yeah, thanks for doing what you're doing. Thanks for sending truth out there. I mean, it's very courageous of you. Thanks for playing your part in making this world a better place.
Absolutely. Okay, well, we'll hopefully hear from you again. Cheers.
Yeah, be happy.
Well, I do hope you enjoyed that. I'm just going to play to you now a short clip from one of Aidan's shows. This is where he's actually talking about Julian Assange. We've got a few minutes left in the show, so I'll just probably end today with that.
WikiLeaks, according to Chris Anderson on TED Talks, released more classified information than all of the media in the whole world in just a few years. And even after this information was released, the mainstream media failed, refused, or neglected to report it. We found out about chemicals being dumped off the Ivory Coast. We found out about war crimes in Iraq, Afghanistan. We found out about the Icelandic bankers, the elite bankers, stealing from the masses and putting it in the hands of the few. He basically saved the country. Imagine that happened in Ireland. And it inspired me because I believe in debt forgiveness. And I don't just say that. I back it up with my actions. I borrowed money from a bank. I didn't pay them back. And I forgave myself. We found out about the madness of Scientology. We found out about people being tortured in Guantanamo Bay, even though that they knew they were innocent. We found out about all this information, but even after it was released as documented facts, the mainstream media failed, refused, or neglected to report it. But yet, however, within hours of there being unfounded, dubious allegations of a sexual nature against Julian Assange, all over the mainstream media. Rapey Julian Assange. Is Julian Assange a rapist? Well, clearly I couldn't trust the same media who failed, refused, or neglected to report the documented facts. So I looked into it. Turns out Assange had sex with two women on two separate occasions. You dirty. And the condom broke on one occasion, and woman A contacted woman B and said, I can't contact Julian Assange, and I'm worried I might have an STD. Could you come with me to the police station? Woman B agreed. They went to the police station on the other side of Stockholm, passing many police stations on the way to a personal friend of woman A, who broke protocol and forgot or refused or didn't record the conversation. But that's a conversation I'd love to have seen. When I was making sweet consensual love to Julian Assange, the condom broke, and well, I'm worried I might have an STD and I can't contact him. Maybe he's busy saving the world, or maybe he's just being a typical male prick, but can you help me? Hold on a second, are you saying Julian Assange, founder of WikiLeaks, enemy of the most powerful governments and people in the world, raped you? No, that's not what I said at all. She refused to sign the statement. She texted her friend, the policeman made up the charges. She even put on Twitter, I wasn't raped by Julian Assange. It's like you're not listening to me and you're just making up whatever you want to hear. What? There's a black man where? I'll shoot him in the back. The chief prosecutor dropped the case within 24 hours, saying there is no case. The condom came back with zero DNA evidence whatsoever. Women Against Rape fully backed Julian Assange. So if you look into it, you can see if there's any crime here committed at all, it's the crime of having a pointy penis. What? I'm pretty sure it's not illegal yet to have a needle knob. We'd have to start rounding up all the sharp shafts. What are you in for? 7 years armed robbery. What about yourself? Oh, I got a case of the pyramid pecker. And anyway, of course the condom broke. It's Julian Assange. He's the best in the world at breaking through all forms of protection.
That was Aidan Killian, and he will be doing a show in Melbourne at the Butterfly Club on March the 5th and 6th, and he will be doing a show on March the 11th at the Harvest Cafe in Byron Bay, and he'll be in Sydney on March the 15th, where he'll be doing a show at the Hive Bar in Sydney. So any of our Sydney listeners, strongly recommend getting over there and having a listen to his show. Maybe take the man out for a beer afterwards. If you're an awake individual, you may enjoy having a chat with Aidan Killian. Well, that just about winds up our show for this week. I hope you've enjoyed everything we've covered. The material I was talking about there in the first hour continues to be a controversy in Australia, and we're going to see more come out in relation to that. And this whole issue of re-engineering society on the basis of protecting minorities, on the basis of supposedly the greater values that we all stand for, of course relates back to this question of cultural Marxism, which I was talking about in previous shows, and the term has actually popped up again and is being used in that context, and it is a classic case of cultural Marxism. All I can say is let's try and make a stand for what we know to be true, for what we know in our heart, and as Aidan Killian said, let's consider truth and love to be the core driving influences and the things that we stand by. As Truth News Radio, we'll be back next week. See you then.